Hello?
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 It's
Hello?
Cliff.
Hello?
Hello, it's Cliff.
It's Diane here. Diane's with that. This is Cliff?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Cliff. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I'm actually driving down a highway right now.
Oh, it's amazing that you can do that. How can you concentrate while driving? That's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm also driving a semi with a load on it.
Oh, Cliff, be careful.
Yep.
That's not safe.
I am
started. My name is Steve Olson. I'll be picking up for Kurt today, who's on his way back home from Chicago, and the plane's running a little bit late, so I'll be happy to help you out today. Those of you that have been on this call for a couple of weeks heard me, I think 3-4 weeks ago or so, I subbed in as well, and it happens from time to time. We're going to talk about one of the laws of persuasion today: minimize your competition and prevent your prospects from doing business with your competition, but do it in a way that's tactical and subconscious to a degree. So we'll get to that in just a minute. We've been talking about a few things over the last few weeks. We touched on dissonance. We've been talking heavily about that and inoculation as well. Always like to give people an opportunity to ask questions, which we'll do so in just a minute. I'm also going to give you my email address at the end of the call today so that you can feel free to ask me any questions that you may not necessarily be comfortable asking on the line today. So feel free at any time to jump in and ask me questions or make a point if you feel the need to do so. That always certainly helps. The more points of view we can get on this kind of stuff, the more of a foundation everybody has to be able to apply the laws of persuasion and these techniques into their business.
Excuse me, Steve.
We want to do. Before I get rolling on today's information, are there any comments or questions or anything of that nature that somebody has today?
Excuse me, Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm blind and I have an inability to hear sometimes. So I'm going to put my speakerphone on and it screeches, so just bear with me. Thank
you. Just go ahead and hit *6 once you're there, and that should mute your line out.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And if you have comments, just hit *6 again, and you'll be back on the line. And if it gets too ridiculous, you know, with noises, I may just mute everybody out and bring you back in periodically. Occasionally, somebody gets the bright idea to operate a jackhammer or something while we're on one of these calls and doesn't get the hint. So we'll cross
Steve.
That bridge if need be. But today we're going to talk about one of the laws of persuasion called verbal packaging. And if you're not familiar with what I mean by laws of persuasion, essentially it's research that Kurt has done for about the last 18 to 20 years through a bunch of psychology journals and studies and field tests and things like that. And so this is stuff that is proven to work. Human brains, human reactions are proven to happen a certain way when we implement these laws of persuasion. So your goal as a persuader is to implement as many of them as possible, as many times as possible, without your prospect feeling like you're, you know, handling them, so to speak. Once people become aware that we're trying to persuade them, it gets that much more difficult to do so. So the law of verbal packaging, a good way to think about this is I was a while back I was in college and I had a class called Political Science 201. And on the first day of class, it was about political philosophy. And the professor gets up there, and if any of you have ever had a philosophy class before, you know that they like to start class with some deep and burning question, you know, like, what is life, or what is truth, or what is justice, right? And it's supposed to provoke this really deep conversation, and everybody comes in with their thoughts, and then the professor gives you the lesson on Aristotle or whoever it is for the day. Well, on this first day of class, was really difficult because it was at about 2:30 in the afternoon in the summertime. So talking about this stuff, 2:30 in the afternoon in the summertime when you're in college, there's other things you'd rather be doing, okay? But he did ask a pretty thought-provoking question. He said, what came first, thought or language? What came first, thought or language? And there never really is a correct answer in these kinds of questions, and that's the point. But we as a class kind of concluded and got to the side of this argument that, well, it'd be kind of tough to have any thought or any thought that's of note without language. I mean, you'd just kind of be instincts and run completely off your feelings, and that's what we concluded, and that's ultimately what he went on to explain throughout that lesson, that we all have a framework in our brain that is made up of words. We understand what's happening in our life. We express what's happening in our life through language, through words, through how we identify something. Now, you're, you know, in your car on the way home from work or sitting in your office or something, and I want you to just focus on any object that is around you, that without having some kind of a word pop into your mind. It's automatic. Because your mental framework is made up of language, it automatically calls up something to identify what you just focused on. So that is how completely how we process and how we feel about information. And so that being said, words have a tremendous effect on how we perceive things. And there's been a statistic, I would have to look up the exact numbers. I think I'm in the ballpark here, because it is a very misquoted statistic. But when we talk to somebody, 60% of what we think and feel about that person is based on their body language. 30% is based on our vocal inflection, and 10% is based on our actual word choice. Now, obviously, these areas can bleed into each other a little bit. When we talk about the law of verbal packaging, inflection and tone is a part of that. And obviously, word choice is, too. So 40% of the message that you're giving somebody is going to be affected by what we are discussing here today. The word choice is critical. It is critical. So let's go over a few things here, because it is something that changes. I mean, when you were growing up and when you were younger, people used words that they don't use today, and vice versa. Okay? So we need to know what those are. We need to know what the effect of them is. And so I'd like to start with what we call the naughty list. Okay? These are words that, as a persuader, you should begin to eliminate completely from your vocabulary. And Kurt may have discussed this briefly with you before, but I really want you to take a step forward and to do it. And there's a couple of ways to do this. One way is to get a little 3x5 card and write these words on it, cross them out, just carry it around in your pocket with you for a couple of weeks. Every time you take out your wallet, every time you take out your cell phone, you're going to see that, and it's going to hound you, and it's going to remind you. If you spend most of your day in an office, you could just paste that 3x5 card by your computer monitor or something so that it's always there, it's always looking at you. And the number one word that we want to completely eliminate from our vocabulary as a persuader is if. I-F. If is a conditional word. It leaves the prospect a way out. If we do business, Mr. Prospect, if you accept my offer, if you join my team, well, that leaves the matter open up for question, doesn't it? And there's already enough things working against you. You don't need to be planting little subconscious ways out for them. So I want you to eliminate the word if, and I want you to replace it with when. and it's going to feel a little bit awkward, I promise you. You've been saying if your whole life, okay? So when you go to say it, your brain's going to say, we don't say if. You're going to put in when. You're going to feel like, I'm not comfortable. That doesn't sound quite right. Trust me, you'll get there. A lot of that is a function of confidence. You don't want to say when because you don't really believe that they're going to do business with you or that that might be a possibility. Okay, so if for when. Instead of using the word but, you want to use the word because. There's a very interesting study that was done at a university by a professor of psychology just to show you how powerful the word because is. A group of students was in the basement of the university library, and they were in line to make copies at this copy machine. So the professor said, you know what, I'm going to go up to the front of the line and do my little study here. So she would go up to the front of the line, and she'd say, excuse me, can I cut in line? I'm late for class. When she did it that way, only half of the people in the line would let her cut. So round two, she went up to the front of the line, and she'd say, okay, can I cut in line? Because I need to make some copies, and I'm late for class. Well into the mid-90 percentile of people allowed her to butt in line. Now get this, this is where it gets really interesting. A third time she decided she was going to go up to the front of the line, and this time she said, excuse me, can I cut in line because I need to make some copies? Now if you think about it, well, what was she hoping to get out of that line? A soda? It was a line for a copy machine. It was obvious that that's why she was there. But still, 90th percentile of people let her cut in line. Remember that verbal framework that I told you about. Ever since we're very, very young, there's something special about the word because. When you hear that word, your brain almost automatically gives a green light to whatever is behind it. If you've got little kids, you say, hey, don't do that, Billy. Don't pull your sister's hair. Don't do that, whatever it is. They say, well, why? Because. Right? You're just assuming that that's the reason, because in and of itself can be a reason for things. Now, I'll give you a little asterisk to this in just a minute, but for now, let's replace but with because, okay? Other words, contract, very dirty word. We don't want to use that word. We want to use agreements or paperwork. You don't want to use sign here. You don't want to say that. I just need your autograph. Let's grab a quick signature. You need to minimize that. Tame the sting. You would never want to tell somebody to sign the contract. Now, I've in strategic negotiations before, I have told them to do that because I didn't want them to sign it. Okay? And do you make it more sound more ominous? Right? You don't want to say something is expensive. You want to say that it's top of the line. It's not cheap. It's economical. Those are some power words that I want you to replace the naughty list with. Put that somewhere. And then there's another word that we need to discuss here too, and that's the word free. What do you think these days when somebody tells you that something is free? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Any takers?
Cheap.
Well, tell you what, I'll just say what you're probably thinking. You're thinking, what's the catch? Right? Free this, free that. Well, it can't really be free. Nothing is free. Right? There's an old Japanese proverb that says, nothing is more expensive than a gift given free of charge. Right? So you need to be completely aware of that. When you offer something for free, people are going to want to know what the catch is. So unless you're able to clearly explain that and make them understand it quickly, free isn't going to be as powerful as it used to be. So watch out for that one. Now let's talk just a second about how you can use this to what I call achieve negative verbal packaging. I just told you a list of words to not use and to replace them with, you know, different words. However, there are going to be some rare circumstances where you'll want to use those words, where they're really going to work to your benefit. And that is when we're addressing the issue of competition. Now, if you sell widgets, your competition is, you know, Bill's Widget Company down the road, but it's also any other bill or any other financial obligation that this person has, especially in a recession, where everybody is competing for an increasingly limited amount of dollars that the consumer has. Sometimes you've got to address the competition. Somebody will ask you, well, I got this price from Bill's Widget Farm. What can you do for me? Or, well, Bob's accounting office said this. What do you think about that? We're under pressure as salespeople and as persuaders to look really objective. People don't want to be sold, like Brian Tracy says. They don't want to be sold, but they love to buy. They want to feel like they are the one that made the decision, that it was all them. But if you start telling them about Bob's Widget House and how they're horrible people and how they use sweatshops and they break the law, you're not going to be seen as objective. They want you to come across as an objective source of information. Now, the ironic thing is if everybody came across as an objective source of information, people would rarely buy anything. There has to be some kind of other impetus or some kind of other motive to get somebody to buy something and get their wallet out. So they need to feel like they're getting the objective information, but in reality, you have a carefully structured persuasive presentation. That's the issue here. So I'll tell you this much. The best way to do this, the best way to appear like an objective person and give the other guy some credit but not taking business away from yourself, is to throw in the word but. You give the other company, you give the competition a virtue, and then you follow it up with a but to negate everything that you just said. But you didn't come right out and negate it and look like you were, you know, chasing after your own best interest. You subconsciously negated the virtue of your competition. Let me give you an example here. Let's say that you're a real estate investor and you're knocking doors of people that are in pre-foreclosure. That doesn't happen as much these days because they're not as hard to find. They're out looking for solutions, right? And maybe your specialty is you've got a network of realtors and you're pushing people into a short sale and you're getting that kind of thing done, making a marketing fee or something like that, if that's legal where you live. Your competition is obviously going to be the loan modification, where the homeowner is going to say, well, yeah, I need to sell, but I thought, you know what, if I can get an interest rate reduction, then I'd be able to afford to stay here, and it would make sense, right? So this is where you give the modification, an idea that is a competitor of yours, a virtue, but then you negate it so that you can come across as more objective to your profit. You can say, well, Bill, that's an understandable point. Your loan modification can be a good route because you get that temporary interest rate reduction. But what you'll find is that it solves nothing in the long term because your house is still way underwater. The interest rate is still going to adjust upward over a period of time. Whereas right now, through the short sale method, if you want to just move on and get into something that works for you long term, this is the time to do it. So we gave the loan modification a virtue, and gave them something good, and we said, but. Plant that little subconscious landmine in there and get rid of the objection. Okay? All I just unmuted myself as I hadn't hurt anyone and wanted to be sure that I hadn't accidentally muted you all out. But you must all be extra reserved today. So that's another way, and we can use this as well on our competition with the other words. We can use the naughty list. You work at the Toyota dealership. Bill says that he's going to go over to the Ford dealership, and you say, well, you know, Ford's got a couple of good vehicles out right now. But what you'll find is when they go to have you sign the contract, that it's going to be more expensive than you had originally thought, because you see how we just took a bunch of the words from the naughty list and flipped them around and pinned them on the competition. Now, when you're talking about your product, you would never in a million years do something like that, right? That would be just stupid. But when you're talking about the competition, it's perfectly okay and even a smart thing to do. Anybody have any questions up until this point? Okay. I have a sneaky suspicion that we have got some kind of a bug in the line today that's not allowing responses. We should get that going there. So, what we need to do, homework item number one for you, is to take a 3x5 card, jot down those words, jot down the naughty list that we talked about, carry it around with you in your pocket so that you pull it out with your wallet or with your cell phone or paste it by your computer monitor so that you're always seeing it. That's homework item number one. Homework item number two, when talking about your product or about your service or your idea, eliminate the words on the naughty list and replace them with the power words, the words that work well. Homework item number three, when addressing the competition, it's time to get out the naughty list. It's time to use those words to your advantage. Pretty self-explanatory, you understand, but what you want to do is take the next 2 or 3 weeks to apply it. This is one of those really cool persuasion habits that once you condition yourself to it, it sticks pretty well with you. It's not super difficult to remember how to do. It's a pretty... So there you go. That is our quick little lesson on verbal packaging for today. And I'll give everybody one final chance to ask their questions or wait till next week to get some more in. Does anybody have any specific questions that they'd like to put before the group today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I've been wondering about this question when I've invited people to look at my business. And one of the things I've been told is that we should say, this may or may not be for you, and then you move on, you know, to introducing what you're doing. Is that the verbal language that should be used?
That's not a bad approach, because it does address the issue of objectivity, right? You want them to understand that, look, you know, I'm not going to beat you over the head. You're going to know if this is for you or if it's not, because you're a smart person. That's essentially what you're saying when you do that. So the idea is, however, is your presentation is carefully crafted so that they go, well, duh, this is for me, right? And, it, and in addition, it sort of... alleviates the whole desperate salesperson stigma that a lot of people have, that, you know, you're going to be willing to say whatever it takes to get the sale. But when you acknowledge up front that, hey, it just might not work for you, period, and there's nothing I can do about that, that's designed to kind of take away that pressure. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Because what we've been learning through the Mastery Program is to involve people. And so that, by saying that, I guess they immediately want to know what they're going to be involved in, and then they participate.
Yes, and the whole may or may not be for you thing is you giving them permission to take their guard down.
Yeah.
Because it, and you can take it one step further. There's a book out there called You Can't Teach a Kid to Ride a Bike at a Seminar. a long title, but it's by a gentleman named David Sandler, who was a great sales trainer. He's since passed on. But I first figured out this technique when I read his book. It's called The Upfront Contract. And when you first begin a sales dialogue with somebody, you get a commitment out of them. You say, now, Bill, this may or may not be right for you. But before I kind of highlight this for you so you make a decision, I need you to be willing to commit to something for me. Oh, okay, what's that? I need you to be willing to tell me no. If you decide that this isn't going to work for you, you just tell me no. My feelings aren't hurt in the least. That way we can, you know, avoid wasting time with me calling you and setting up appointments and you feeling bad because you don't want to. It's okay to tell me that. Are you okay with this? Are you willing to tell me no if that's what you really feel? Right? That's an upfront contract, and it's designed to kind of box them in to prevent you from wasting a bunch of time, but primarily to lower their guard, to get that guard down.
Would you repeat that? I need you to tell me no.
I need you to be willing to tell me no.
Okay.
If you have decided that my product isn't right for you at this time.
Okay.
Now let me give you a little asterisk with that. If you can't say that, if you can't say what I just said, or some variation of it, with complete confidence, it is going to come across as so corny, okay? You have to rehearse it, and you have to have it down cold. If you come in shaky, okay, I need you to be willing to tell me no, it's going to slaughter the whole rest of the presentation. So
yeah.
Rehearse it, make sure you have it down cold, and can say it very confidently and very smoothly before you implement it.
Okay, I guess that would give them permission to exit if they want, graciously, more or less. And you know what? I think you have to know that in yourself, that you really are giving them that kind of permission. So practicing it is good for your own self-confidence.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, any other questions or comments before we wrap it up for today?
Oh, just make sure you give your email address.
Did I hear another question out there, or was I hearing things?
Yeah, my name is Peter, and the third section where you're reintroducing the naughty list when addressing the competition, I find that fascinating. And do you have references as far as where we can practice or role play those type of communication skills?
Well, tell you what, I'll give you my email. You can contact me about that. I'd have
okay.
to review a few of my obligations. Believe it or not, that concept of reverse verbal packaging is my information. I didn't get that from anywhere. It's something I developed on my own. So that's why
okay.
I have to. Yeah, so I'll give my email address, and you can contact me, and we can visit about that.
Okay.
Okay.
By the way, could we stay on after you've gone and practice between each other right away?
What was that?
If anyone is interested in role-playing after, you know, you leave, maybe we could do it between each other if anybody's interested.
Yeah, you're certainly welcome to hang on the line and visit if you choose to do so. I know we've got the line for a certain amount of time, and I think there's a few minutes left on the clock for you to do that. But I am going to have to call it a night, everyone. You can get in touch with me if you've got other questions about what we visited about today. My email address is steve@persuasioniq.com. steve@persuasioniq.com.
It is wrong.
Okay.
Is Eve spelled E-V-E?
Yep, S-T-E-V-E @persuasioniq.com.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You guys have a good night, and I'll be back on the line with you, I'm sure, again shortly, but you can most likely expect Kurt to be back with you next week. Have a good night.
Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
Okay. If anybody wants to role play, anyone want to role play with me after the conference?
This is Peter. I will.
I'm glad you're going to stay on. Peter, it's Diane speaking. Are you still on?
I am, yes.
Hi. Actually, Peter, would you, since we don't have long to maybe stay on this conference call, if you would like to give me your phone number, I'll call you and we could do role plays if you like.
Sure.
Okay.
847.
What is it? 84?
7.
7?
7-0.
7-0.
248.
0248. Okay, I've got it. 847-7248.
847-770-1248.
Whoa. I have a vision loss, so hang on and do it again. 847. Then comes what?
770.
770.
1248.
7248. Let's see if I've got it right now. 847-770-7248.
No, 1248.
1248. Okay. Here, I'll try again. 847-770-1248.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and Peter, whereabouts is that?
Give me a call and then we'll talk.
Okay, I'll call you back. Bye.